Welcome to Femcasters, a podcast and community where feminine wiles and ferocious female voices collide.
Femcasters was born from the idea that we can change the world one broadcast at a time. We are here to unite and elevate the voices of silence breakers just like you, girl wide.
Let's kick it, Karina.
Kick it.
We have Dr. Debbie Galboa here. I am so beyond excited. She is amazing. She makes everything she does look easy. She's a doctor. She's a speaker, a TEDx speaker. She is a phenom. She's an author. I don't even know where to start and begin with you because you're amazing. How do you do it? First of all, I mean, you embody being a femcaster. How do you do it?
Okay. So I think a really good place to start is why I started. Because one of the things I would really like everybody who is in this space to think about is, what's the problem you most want to solve now? It doesn't have to be the problem you want to solve 5 years from now or forever, but right now, the energy you're putting towards whatever project that you're thinking about while you're with us today, why? What is the problem you're trying to solve? And it could be, you know, it could be anything, but when you put it in those terms, then it gets much easier to be able to broadcast your expertise, to help people see who, not just why everybody should listen to you, because everybody shouldn't, but who should come to you and why they should come to you. So I figured out that I really wanted to help people to think differently about stress. I was watching people run scared from stress, to run away from it and feel like, oh gosh, if they're stressed, then I shouldn't be here. Or if I'm stressing someone else, then I'm a villain. Stress is really bad. Stress isn't bad any more than exercise is bad. I hate both of them equally, but exercise is valuable to make me physically stronger. Stress, when I choose it or when I approach it in a healthy way, is perfect for making me mentally stronger. And that's true for everybody. So that was the thing I wanted to do. This is the space that I wanted to be in. It's the problem that I wanted to help people solve. And that helped me figure out what to read and what to write and what I wanted to say and who to bug to be on their podcast or to talk about it on the morning news or to get quoted in their article, because you're not for everybody, because not everybody has or sees the problem that you can help them solve. But the people who do need you.
Well, I love that. I had interviewed somebody on my podcast who put it really simply. His name's Scott Perry. And the podcast I'm referring to is a few episodes ago for Care More, Be Better. And he said, you have to discover the difference only you can make. And I felt like that was such a really succinct and clear way to think about it, because your voice is individualized and your approach to what you're telling the world is also an individual approach. So figuring out who you're talking to and then just honing that message, I think is key to anybody's success in podcasting, in any media for that matter.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it.
Now, you speak about resilience and resilience as it connects to stress. And I would just love to hear you talk about that a little bit because, well, I just think your takeaways are brilliant in this perspective.
I really appreciate it. Resilience is this bucket word. We all carry around a bucket of like, yeah, I know what resilience is, but we have different things in the bucket. And so the definition that I use when I'm speaking about resilience is the ability to navigate change and come through it with integrity and purpose, or put more simply, come through it the kind of person you want to be. And I don't say the ability to navigate only difficulty or adversity, because it turns out from a neuroscience standpoint, all change is stressful. Even the good stuff, even the stuff we work towards, it's all stressful. Meaning all change makes our brains go, wait, what's going on here? What could I lose? Can I really trust this? What's going to make me uncomfortable? And those are just three safety mechanisms that happen in our brains. So you guys know I'm a family doctor and I do a lot of well child checks, which means that I have a reflex hammer and I tap a lot of knees. So if I had, Karina, if I had one of your boys for a well child check in front of me and I tapped their knee and I was standing right in front of him, I would get kicked, right? Mm-hmm. Is that because your son is a jerk?
No, But I will say that he has chased me around after one of those doctor's appointments to like hit my knee because he thinks it's funny. And
it's amazing because it's cool because you can't control it. It's this thing. It's like a switch.
That must be Roro we're talking about.
Oh, Benedict. He's very precise. Roland's less precise, but Benedict's very good at getting the reflex to occur.
So, but you wouldn't blame him if the doctor got kicked. You'd be like, doesn't that doctor know what's going to happen? Why'd she stand right in front of him if she didn't want to get kicked? So we have this problem as adults when we bring change to a situation, when we announce change, when we even talk about the possibility of change, we stand right in front of people and we continuously get kicked. Yep. We have to learn to stand to the side when we announce change to other people. And we have to learn not to be mad at ourselves for the reflex when we have it. We have to know that every time there's a possibility of change, our brain is going to cycle through that. What could I lose? Can I really trust this? What's going to be uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. And then we can start to be resilient. And all we have to do to be resilient is to remember that we can feel that loss, feel that distrust, feel that discomfort, and we have choices. If we're still breathing, we have choices. Remembering that we have choices before we even try and figure out what they are, pick them, try them, see how they go. Just remembering that we have choices is the only resilient act we have to remember in order to navigate that change. That's resilience right there. The ability to navigate change and come through it a little closer to the kind of person you want to be.
It sounds to me like what you're advocating for is a response to stress that is more focused on the opportunity.
And empathy. Mm-hmm. I want us to stop being mad at ourselves for worrying about the loss and feeling the distrust and the discomfort. Don't bother being angry at yourself for having a reflex. It's like being angry at your seatbelt for locking when you tap the brakes. You can be annoyed by it. Your feelings are yours, but don't waste the energy feeling like you somehow made a mistake because you didn't. All change is stressful, but all the things that we want, especially people who are here with us today, you're thinking about doing something bigger or more or trying something you've never tried. It will be stressful. All change brings stress, but all growth, all accomplishment, all success requires change. So we have to learn how to navigate this in ways that feel better, that we feel less winded so that we can enjoy all of these things that we're aiming for.
And I feel like being in your comfort zone is more stressful for me than taking those risks or choices to plot out your direction for your dreams. And we're talking to Dr. Debbie Gilboa, and she's a family practitioner, but she's also really well known on different speaking circuits. She just shared that she's going to be on The View next Thursday. I mean, I feel like you're navigating change 24/7, plus you're a mother of four boys. I mean, that's bananas.
It is often bananas, yes. Well, one of the things that really changed for me when I started to think about what is stress, what's valuable about it, and don't get me wrong, some stress, if it's avoidable and it's not useful, step away from it. A really good resilient skill is setting boundaries and saying, all these things are mine, but that thing over there, that is not mine. I don't have to worry about that. I can navigate my life and be the kind of person I want to be without picking that up. Okay. When I started to look at stress though, as, okay, how can I do all these things I want and basically feel less winded? Have you ever picked up a new hobby and you're not in good enough shape for it? And you think, I want to do this, but I don't want to gasp for breath and feel exhausted through it. So you think, okay, what do I have to do to get in slightly better shape? So I knew I wanted four kids. I was a camp counselor. I babysat. I knew that this was going to be stressful. I knew that it wouldn't be easy. And I knew I wanted four kids. I did not necessarily know that I would have four boys in 6 years, but I do know what causes it. I did it on purpose. So I had to train up for it. And as soon as I looked at it like that, like, what can I do so that I can do this thing I really want to do and be a little less winded by it, then it put that self-efficacy back in my hands. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that I was ready for one of my son's mental health crises. And it doesn't mean that I was ready for another of my sons to join the military. And it doesn't mean I was ready for my divorce. It doesn't fix everything, but it made me somewhat more fit so that when hard things happen, I remembered, in the words of Glennon Doyle, we can do hard things. I have done hard things. I can get stronger.
You are a cheetah.
Darn it, I am.
Darn it.
So I want to hear from you about how you prepare when you are getting ready to go on the big screen or the little screen in our living rooms, hosting or guesting on shows like The View.
I actually, I have a book coming out in the spring, and I put this story in there as an example of good change that I worked really hard for that knocked me on my behind. So the very first time I was on national TV, I got a call at home in Pittsburgh on a Wednesday in May. And the very next morning at 5 a.m., I was, I can't say waking up in a hotel room in New York because I'm not sure I ever fell asleep, but I was opening my eyes to an alarm to go on Good Morning America. And they tape very early, as you might know. And here I was, like, I had worked for this. I was so excited. I had my outfits. I was all right. I knew exactly what I was going to talk about. I go downstairs. They sent a town car. I get into the town car. The driver was amazing. He was straight out of Central Casting. His name was Tommy. He says to me, "Hey, Doc, did I know you look like you're like 12 years old?" So I was super confident, obviously, from his compliments to start with. And he drops me off 5 blocks and 20 minutes later because of New York traffic. And he says, "You ready?" And I thought, no. Oh my gosh, I'm going to lose everybody's respect. I'm going to lose my ability to speak. I'm going to lose my ability to breathe. And they're probably not going to have me on anyway. I'm sure we'll get bumped. And these shoes are really uncomfortable. And I don't know how to memorize my script. Like, I had all the loss and distrust and discomfort. And it didn't matter that I know that that happens. It didn't matter at all. I completely got overwhelmed by that. We can't help the reflexes. Knowing about your knee reflex, you know, your son has hit your knee probably 24 times, Karina. It's still going to jump. Mm-hmm. Can't stop that reflex. And so what I do is I have empathy for myself. Like, yep, those are normal feelings. That this is a big deal. It's even though it's a change I wanted and worked for and told everybody I was excited about, it's got a lot of risk to it also. Okay. And then I try to give myself a little bit of processing time and I try to have the information that calms me because I'm the kind of person that more information feels like more power, which is good. You want that in your doctor, actually. And then I remember that I still have choices. I could leave. I could fake an illness and walk off the set of Good Morning America. They've never brought anyone on at gunpoint. They probably won't bring me on at gunpoint, right? Like I could bail. And as soon as I remembered that I could leave, I didn't have to. So, I have been lucky enough since then to be on a bunch of TV shows and hosting, as a matter of fact, is actually easier for me than guesting. I host sometimes on a daytime TV show called The Doctors, and then I can focus on the guest and putting them at ease and connecting with them. But when I'm the guest, for whatever reason, I have a harder time and I don't seem to stop. I expect this to happen next week when I go to The View. So what I have to remember is I have strategies to navigate this. I can't keep it from happening. No point being mad. I have strategies to help me navigate those feelings.
That's so interesting. You know, for me, when I first started out in the world of podcasting, being in the interview seat was the harder part than being on the other side of it. Because I could talk all day long about my reasons for starting the podcast without any sort of issue. But thinking of the right questions to ask the person and doing all that research beforehand, I probably threw way more time than I needed to because I'm also somebody who gets on track through gathering that information and knowing it as well as I can. So now I
Dr.
feel like
G,
I
let's
could,
turn the tables
yeah,
and interview Karina right now.
Why don't you?
And Karina, I want to point out that I've got this, you know, I've got this secret weapon in terms of interviewing, which is I'm a family doctor. All I do is interview people all day, right? I ask you come in to see me and I ask you, hey, what brought you in today? So if I was interviewing you on the spot, because nobody warned me I might have to do that, I might say to you, hey, so Karina, why are you in this space today? What makes this Femcasters the right place for you with the problem that you want to solve in the world?
Well, I want to break that glass ceiling for everybody because I feel like right now, even if we have, let's say, a woman in the second highest office in the United States, still fewer than 6% of CEOs in Fortune 500 companies are women. And that's here in the United States. In Norway, guess what? 50% of women are CEOs, or 50% of CEOs are women. I don't know if I said that correctly. You get what I'm saying.
Or vice versa.
We have a long way to come in many ways here in America, which is a little bit more patriarchal than I think we sometimes give it credit for. And that spans many industries. It even goes into broadcasting. And so I think we have work to do, and I want to be part of it.
Have you seen a lot of pushback because you are a female who is in broadcasting, who is a speaker, who is an author, or have you not met with that, Dr. G?
Absolutely. One of the most obvious and yet subtle things that I notice is that I get introduced by my manager or the booking agent or whatever as Dr. Gilboa or Dr. G. And although I have never gone by this, anchor after anchor calls me Dr. Deb. My first name is Deborah. And, or they just call me by my first name. And I have watched because I'm curious and because I am on a show called The Doctors. This never happens to male docs. There is no question that there is a great deal of sexism and a great deal of racism. You know, mm-hmm. I have tons of privilege because I am white appearing, because I'm cis. There are all kinds of things that privilege me. And yet, for sure, you know, honestly, I still get it as a doctor, even from my patients. You know, I'll walk in to see a patient in the hospital because I do that before I go to the office. And if it's a patient that doesn't remember me because they're ill or hasn't met me, they're one of my partner's patients. When I walk in the room, they will often, actually, really surprisingly often say, are you from dietary? Because I ordered tea and you brought me coffee. And I have to say, hey, so bad news, I'm your doctor.
I love the sense of humor that you approach that with, because I think it's so disarming. And it's a really sweet way to call people on their biases without, you know, making them offended per se.
Well, and honestly, I switched it because I thought that sounded a little too snarky. I want to set up, doctors have so much power, and I want to set up a really equal relationship as best I can with someone, especially somebody who is, you know, mostly naked and sick and vulnerable. So I start off now in the last 5 years by saying, good news, I'm your doctor. Let's talk. And it does the same, it makes the same point without sounding at all, I think, insulting. Mm. And that's been a struggle for me because, you know, as Jules mentioned, I came from Second City. If you can get the laugh, snark is no price to pay at all, right? Mm-hmm. Sarcasm is fun, but I have grown and I have a long way to grow, but I have grown in my own humility and my own modesty so that I understand how much it's my job to try and elevate the other person. And I have 20 years experience interviewing people, but I think, you know, comparatively speaking, I have 2 minutes experience understanding, truly understanding what people go through when they have to be the patient. None of us see ourselves as a patient. So as much as I try and see people as people, I have to remember how disadvantaged everybody feels when they're talking about something that's hard for them, whether they're in my office or we're talking about it on television. It doesn't matter. When they're talking about something that's truly painful, everyone feels disadvantaged. And so one of the things that you can do in broadcasting is really bring not just authenticity, which I think is crucial, but compassion and empathy.
Well, fantastic. I feel like we have to sum up the tips that you've given us today.
And I was going to ask Dr. G for her biggest tips, if she could think of two things that have really changed her trajectory with her speaking career, what would they be?
My first tip is to figure out where the audience that you want to reach, to your former guest's point, Karina, when you figure out what's really authentic and unique about your voice, mm-hmm. figure out where the people you want to reach already are, what they're listening to, what they're watching, and approach those folks. If it's really niche, if it's really big, it doesn't matter. Approach those folks and help them see that you want to help them serve their audience. The second thing that I want to mention goes to your question, Jules, about how I keep track of all four of my kids and do the stuff I do. And the answer is remarkably simple. I don't mind having a messy house, and I hold my kids equally responsible to keeping the trains running on time at home as I hold myself.
I'm taking notes, and I've heard that before, and I've tried that before, but yeah. No, it's so true. You have to understand what is important, what your overall vision is for your life, and let the things that don't matter fall to the wayside.
I really think that success comes when your calendar matches your priorities.
Ooh, and say that again. That's really good.
I think that success comes, and I don't mean this is success. I mean, I think it opens the door to success, to feeling that sense of well-being and accomplishment when your calendar matches, at least in great part, your actual priorities. I often wonder if somebody could open up my calendar and my calendar would give you a seizure, right? It's got different colors for all the kids and I'm really specific or else I will forget to do stuff. But I often wonder if somebody could open up my calendar who had never met me. And if they wrote down the things that they thought from my calendar were my top five priorities, maybe even in no particular order, but my top five priorities, would they be able to tell?
I think that's really astute.
That's really great. And we're going to quote you on that. You may see that on social media. In fact, you will.
That's for certain. Yes.
Amazing stuff. Amazing things. Tell us where we can find you. We know you're going to be on The View next week, but you've got some big things going on in 2022.
I do. I'm really excited about a bunch of opportunities that are coming. And I'm always keeping an eye out to see where I can serve and who I can partner with, because just like I've done with you, Julie, and I'm so happy to have met you, Karina, it's the relationships that you get to form, I think, that make this the most fun. The easiest way to find me is my website. It's askdrg.com. But the best way to communicate with me is on social. So on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or YouTube, a little on Snapchat and TikTok, because I'm the mom of four kids. I would love to talk to you and answer questions.
You guys, make sure you ask Dr. G. She's ready and willing. She is our role model. She is a femcaster. She embodies everything that is a femcaster.
Well, I'm just in awe. I love a couple of things that you said that really stand out to me today. And one of them being the power of empathy. I think we all need to give ourselves a little bit more forgiveness, especially as we tackle challenges in our lives. And if we take that seed with us into our daily lives, we can live a more fulfilling life. So thank you for that.
Okay, guys. Okay, Femcasters, you go check out Dr. G in our show notes. You're going to kick it with her, and you may even see her on the Femcaster platform. We love you. And thank you so much, Dr. G. This has been so fun and really just mind-changing.
I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me to the conversation.
You want to say kick it, Dr. G?
Kick it!
Kick it!
Kick it!
We're crazy.
We are crazy. It's perfect.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Femcasters. We hope you were inspired. We hope you were motivated. We hope you think a little bit differently about how your voice, your very own voice, can change the universe. So tap on those 5 stars. Share the love. Share this episode with another Femcaster that you think could use this message today.
And head over to Femcasters.com for all the goods we covered today, including tools to elevate your voice. You can join our exclusive community and celebrate the Femcaster in you. Together, we can elevate the power and the voice of women worldwide. Let's do this.